It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Yes. Right. What up, everybody? Happy to another week, another show, another day with the LEFKOE, man. So happy to have you guys back again. Hope you look great. I see you looking in the mirror. You look amazing. Welcome back. And we got a beautiful show. We're going to have the guest, Rand Getlin, former NFL Network insider, that I'm going to be honest, he was really honest. What he's going to tell you guys about the NFL Network and how reporting works in the NFL is going to really open up a lot of people's eyes. At the end of the show, I have a left conspiracy for you. Yes, I do. I have a conspiracy theory that I think has a chance to really, really be interesting. It's a conspiracy theory about Belichick replacing Gronk. So after the Rand Getlin interview, stay tuned for that. Just some like news and notes with the homies and how you guys are living. Appreciate Seth Bernstein for helping launch the Reddit for Lefco Show. I think about like last time I checked, about 90 people had subscribed. So go into that. We're going to do a Q&A on that Reddit. So if you want to go into that Reddit, r/Lefco Show, one of the posts there is a weekly Q&A. People will put up there some questions, and I'll answer one or two probably on the Thursday episode of the podcast. Good to see that up and running. Not sure if you saw this. Christian McCaffrey posted a dunk, and I got a text right away from Devontae saying, "Don't make me show him my dunks." I said, "Devontae, you show away." He tweeted them out, and I'm telling you, we're working on it. This NFL dunk contest has legs, really big legs. I don't think Devontae Adams and Christian McCaffrey are the only two guys that can dunk in the NFL, and I know that Bleacher Report is going to work our way to making sure that it is a big-time show. Every week I do some news and notes. Make sure you guys get caught up on what is going on. A lot of camps are going to be starting for the new coaches. So right now we're going to get, you know, the Browns, and there'll be a lot of stories about Freddie Kitchens. We're going to see Cliff Kingsbury and the Cardinals. And look at our best coach in the NFL, our favorite coach, Sean McVay, pranking him at dinner. Love it. But also there was a trade. Jordan Howard traded to the Eagles for a 2020 sixth-round pick, a conditional pick. I had a lot of people hitting me up about this. I do not believe that Jordan Howard is a top-five running back. I don't think he's a top-10 running back. But what I do think he is that everyone's underestimating, he is a motivating, game-changing, and temperament-changing running back for the Philadelphia Eagles. When the Patriots wanted to put you away, they gave it. When the Eagles want to put you away in the Super Bowl season, they gave it to LeGarrette Blount. You know, when the Rams want to put you away, they had Gurley. The Patriots were able to do it in the Super Bowl with Sony Michel. Eagles didn't have that. So to get a guy on 3rd-and-1 and 3rd-and-2 who's the number one runner behind the center in the NFL last year, behind the number one center at blocking up the run in Jason Kelce, I think it gives them a guy that could help them win games, but he might not give you the 60-yard play, the 70-yard play. But also, he's tough as frickin' nails. I mean, the quotes from the Chicago Bears about this guy playing with his shoulder falling off, it's a trade that I understand from the Bears' perspective. It shows you where we are with the running backs in the current market. But I also understand from the Eagles' perspective, it gives you a hard-nosed fighter at that position. I still think they might draft somebody, but I think it's a good piece to have. Two things that you probably didn't see before we get to Rand Getlin and his enlightening interview. Now he's working with Park Stories. Two executives in the NFL. One is Jim Irsay. And I realized that he may have found, hey, Quentin, what's up, man? His perfect counterpart, guys, in Chris Ballard. So Jim Irsay recently told Chris Ballard about a very high, like, ranking, but also a very notorious player. And I'm like, man, I wonder if this is Le'Veon Bell or whoever it is. He said, you go get him. You be aggressive, and I have no problem with that. Let's get this guy with a horseshoe on his helmet. Ursay then said that Ballard said, you know, we went to this number and I couldn't do it, Jim. I couldn't. And then Ursay said, Chris is very disciplined in his belief on how to build a team, and it's great to see him stick by his discipline. You know that in the past, when a GM went to work for Jim Ursay said, let's do it. Let's go 100 miles an hour. Let's spend all of this hundreds of millions of dollars on anybody we want. Let's bring them in. And now he's finally got a guy to say no to him. Because every GM in the past would be like, yes, let me spend this money. This is what Ursay's needed all along, is a no. Is somebody that can go, man, I love that you'll do everything for this team, Mr. Owner, but not today. Trust me, we have a direction. And then Ursay finished it up with, we like to keep our gunpowder dry because you never know when you might need it. I think that Chris Ballard is currently building an absolute juggernaut with the Indianapolis Colts. They've only signed five guys this season, offseason. They returned them, Glowinski, Desir, Marcus Hunt, Gethers, and Vinatieri. They signed two free agents, Justin Houston and Devin Funchess. Big, impactful on third down. Devin Funchess across the middle on third down. Justin Houston getting after the quarterback on third down. And they still have about $70, $80 million in the cap. They're not doing what the Raiders are doing and throwing $5 million to Perfect here and $10 million to LaMarcus Joyner. They're keeping their own. They're drafting. They're building up. And they're going to use that money when they need it in the waiver system. Ursay finally has his no guy. And I think that's a really big deal for the Colts. The other story that I don't think you guys saw, I know you didn't see, is the Bengals vice president made some quotes that if he were on any other team, it would be front page news and some people would go, you're a front office person? So here's what he had to say. Bengals VP Ben Freeland, when asked why do the Bengals re-sign right tackle Bobby Hart, you could tell that it upset him. This is what he said. For those who say you shouldn't have signed Bobby Hart, who's going to play right tackle? Who? Oh, maybe you'll draft one in the third round and he'll come on? Really? You're going to bet your season on that? Then he kind of took a shot at Trent Brown. This is what he said next. If you're not going to play him, tell me who. Trent Brown at $17 million? Really? A seventh-round draft pick. Let go essentially by his team. Really? We can't go to Walmart and buy off the shelf a high-quality starting right tackle? That doesn't exist in free agency. Wait, what? So now you think that we got to go shop for tackles at Walmart and you're going to insult my man Trent Brown about his contract? Oh, yeah, let's just ignore the fact that Trent Brown had a great season with the Patriots. But there's more here from Ben. We asked Willie Anderson if he could go to a time machine and come back at age 25. We'd love to sign him, but you have to deal in your universe of options. This dude just Rick Pitino'd his press conference. Antoine Walker's not going to come through that. Larry Bird's not going to come through that door. Havlicek ain't going to come. But Willie Anderson is not going to come through that door. And only because he's in Cincinnati is this not making bigger news. If Gettleman said that you can't shop for tackles at Walmart and I wasn't going to pay that guy, are you crazy? They would have gone nuts. But it's only because he's in Cincinnati. And you want to know the proof? Because the Cincinnati vice president's name is not Ben Freeland. It's Troy Blackburn. But you have no idea. Okay? You have no idea. Because Troy Blackburn is actually the VP of the Bengals. He actually said all those things, but I read it and I was like, this is crazy. But that's what it's like, apparently, to be with the Cincinnati Bengals. All right, let's get to the main man, Rand Getland, former NFL Network insider. You may remember back in 2016, he was the reporter that broke Janoris Jenkins' contract, Brock Osweiler, Kelechi Osemele, J.R. Sweezy got a big deal. And then all of a sudden, Rand was gone. And I was like, what's going on? He was beaten. Rappaport, he was like number two to Schefter that year. Then I see Park stories, and I see the story with Jalen Ramsey, and I see the story with Zion Williamson, and I see the story with Jarvis Landry, and I go, this aligns with the show. This aligns with the Lefko show about showing these NFL athletes and what they're like under the helmet. Rand's going to talk about his experiences in law, how he transitioned to a reporter, and is very, very, very honest about his time with the NFL Network. To the homies, you know that we always say, don't just look at the news that is being broken, look at the person that is also breaking the news. Rand doubles down on that. Now, our conversation with Rand Gitlin. What do you think about the intro song?
I was about to say something. I just want to let
it ride. Oh, okay. Yeah. Hey.
Yeah.
I always tell everybody, one of our awesome listeners, Rod Simba, made the beat. He's made all of our music thus far.
Okay.
Him and the Regulators, they get in the studio, they get the live instruments.
Yeah.
They said, now that it's the Lefko show, we need something a little bit more funky.
I was about to say, I feel like this is very on brand for you, bro.
Oh,
like,
yes. No, you know this. Oh, by the way, everybody, that is the voice of Rand Gitlin, storyteller, him and his amazing wife, Janina. I think we could show her on camera if she's cool with it. They have the production. Is it a production company, Park Stories?
Yeah, it's a production company. It's ever evolving, so we do a lot, but yeah, production company.
And I found out about you just from NFL Network and being a reporter and breaking news and seeing you break news on top of a dumpster and all that stuff. Like, I've seen all those things before. How are you?
I'm great, man. I appreciate you
having
me.
I'm so happy you came to New York, dude. I appreciate it.
Thank you, bro. I'm a big fan. So thank you. You know, when I
we're
was
like at, social media friends.
Yeah, 100%.
We've like DM'd a lot, and yeah. We've never actually met before.
And this is the first time.
But that's the internet. That's why the internet's
fucking
awesome.
Did we just become best friends?
I think so.
No, it's amazing, man. I mean, as a reporter, you know, I used to develop relationships on the phone.
Sure.
Primarily, right? So you'd go like a year talking to somebody 2-3 hours a day when you're in it. And then you'd meet for the first time. And it was like, it was always interesting because you're like, hey, you know,
yes.
I know you, and it's warm, and at the same time, you're like, this feels different.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, but yeah, 100%. Man, I'm thrilled to be out here.
Cool.
Jay is thrilled to be out here, so thanks for having us.
Can you explain everybody your path? How did you get to this point? And by the way, I've played clips of your stuff before. I've linked to it. If you've seen the Jalen Ramsey mini documentary about kind of him being a dad and interacting with his dad in training, the Jarvis Landry one, I think those were all over the place. And even in college basketball, your Zion one, it's always great when you can go over 1 million views on YouTube. That's got to feel pretty darn special. So you've been able to be with these athletes and show their interpersonal lives. But how did we get to this point? What was your path?
Yeah, fair question. So I don't have a short answer for you. I always say this is going to be the short answer, and it's always mad long. But I'm going to give you the...
It's a podcast.
Yeah, all right. I love it. So, you know, the short answer is, you know, I started back in college. I went to the University of Oregon. I lived with football players. Mm. They were my best friends. And so, you know, I was the student, you know, the one that really actually had to pay attention to his grades because I wasn't going to the league.
Right.
And a lot of these dudes were. And so I would also help them get their grades right. Like,
of course.
I'd be on. I'm like, bro, you got to have your grades right. Like, I don't care about that. Like, you have to care about it. So let me help you get it right.
Yeah.
You know? And a lot of these dudes came from less. South Central Los Angeles, where a bunch of my buddies were from. You know, I grew up in Riverside, California, moved to Portland, Oregon. But I grew up in foster care. I grew up on food stamps. And so, you know, I know what struggle is.
You could connect to them.
Yeah, I know what that feels like. And so, you know, I also happen to be multi-ethnic. Now, nobody knows that because I don't. It's not something I usually like lead with.
Right.
And I pass, you know, nobody has any idea that I'm multi-ethnic unless I bring it up. So I've heard.
I allowed myself to be Italian for a long time.
There you go.
I'm Jewish. I think it's identity is enormous.
Yeah,
100%.
It is. It's huge. And, you know, having grown up in the black community, having grown up without much at certain points in my life and then with a lot at other points in my life, because I ended up getting brought in through foster care to what is now my adoptive family, but they're my family. Like, I don't ever say adopt, right? It's my mom, my dad, my brother. But they had done very well for themselves. So it was like the Fresh Prince. So I'd kind of crossed this bridge, if you will, right? I went from having not much, living on food stamps in an environment where there's a lot of violence comparatively.
Sure.
And then I went out to the burbs where the demographics were completely flipped. I went from being the only white boy in my high school to being the only, you know, white dude that acted black at an all-white school.
Sure.
And so there were all these identity things that I had to work through as a young guy. And as I got older and started getting through the college thing with these football players, helping them to cross that bridge as well was important to me. I'm like, bro, if you're going to go to the league, you need to know how to act when right. you hit the mainstream. Like, you can't act in the mainstream the way you acted at home.
Right.
And I'm not saying you have to completely change who you are.
No.
I'm just saying you have to be aware of the new ground rules. So that's a long way of saying, you know, Park Stories, our production company, is an extension of that. Janina is an immigrant. She's Filipina. She was born in the Philippines, raised for the first few years of her life in Manila, and then moved to Juneau, Alaska, where she was an immigrant in a small community, and they were minorities. And so collectively, you know, we just have a deep, deep passion for helping those who were not supposed to succeed to maximize their success, right? And the point of that is that they get to be beacons of hope and light for all the kids like us
right.
who are sitting there thinking to ourselves, like, man, this situation looks hopeless, but look at them.
Of course. They made
it, and here's how they made it through hard work, determination, effort, and, you know, we want to do that too. So, you know, I ended up, when I got done with college, I went to law school at USC, and it's a top 20 law school. You know, the conventional path is you go through year one, you get an internship. You go through year two, you get an internship at another firm. Then you get an offer.
Right.
Then you go to work, you make $200,000 a year. Next year you make 220. Next year you make 240. Next year you make 270, right?
Yeah, the path is laid.
Yeah. And, you know, if you make partner, you're making 800, 900 a year at the top of the top.
Yeah.
Really attractive to a kid who came from nothing.
I think that's attractive to a lot of people.
Yeah. So, you know, what ended up happening is it took me, like, virtually no time. I was like, I worked in, you know, a couple law firms and, you know, bottom line, I was like, yo, this is not for me. This is not for me. Like,
you just feel it.
This is not for me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to be able to be myself. I'm not a suit and tie guy. You know, and culturally, they're not large law firms are not. I just call it what it is, right? They're not diverse places.
Not at all.
Culturally or from, you know, an ethnic standpoint. So I was just like, even in law school, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to figure out a different way to do it. So I've always been very entrepreneurial. Wanted to try out different things and have. And, you know, through that process, I'd started a consultancy to help college players navigate the transition from college to the pros, right? I got my law degree now, and I'm like, yo, I know the agent game. I've seen that. Like,
right.
My friends went through it. I interned at agencies when I was in college.
Sure.
And so I'd learned enough about it to be like, man, you know, if I was 21 and I had to choose a lawyer, a CPA, a financial advisor, an agent, like, how am I supposed to do that?
How do you know what's good, what's bad, who's great, who's not, who's lying to your face? Sure.
How do you have any idea, right?
Yeah.
And so I was like, I remember I went to the Players Association when I was kind of in the research phase. And I'm like, hey, if I wanted to find out how many times an agent has been fired and by whom, if I was selecting an agent, how could I do that? And they're like, oh, we don't keep those stats. Mm. I mean, why? Don't you think that's relevant? Like,
sure.
Wouldn't you want your son or daughter to know? Right?
If they've been fired 12 times, yeah.
Or 30 times,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then to be able to reach out to those players and be like, what happened? Why did this happen? And if it's just like, oh, you know, I didn't like him. That's one thing. If it's another thing, like, yo, I think this dude either ripped me off or led me to somebody who ripped me off. Like, don't you think that is a material, you know, element of making a decision that could impact this kid's life? Especially because...
only there was, like, an association that, like, looked after the players. Yeah, sure.
Oh, man. Yeah. That'll take us on a detour. Anyway, so I was very passionate about that. That business ultimately was not commercially viable because I had a fundamental flaw in my business model. That was that I assumed that NCAA member institutions cared enough about their kids to invest in a program to help them make that transition successfully.
Mm.
You know, could not have been more wrong.
Really?
Could not have been more wrong.
How quickly did you figure that out?
It took me a year and a half to finally give up on it. And it was the most painful failure in my life. Bar none.
Well, because it sounds like everything felt like it was leading up to that.
Yeah.
Your experience at college and, like, seeing it firsthand. And then,
yep.
Like, they're going through the draft and you're going through law school. And it's this perfect thing where now I get to help. And then, oh, y'all don't give a shit?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Bro, it blew me away. And I'll never forget, bro. So I remember, like, you know, I'm super OCD. Like, she can tell you more. So I'm, like, maniacal about it, right? So it's like when I'm in it, I'm in it. 15, 16, 17 hours a day. I wake up at 5 a.m. on fire. I start working. And then, you know, I go to sleep when I pass out, like 10, 11 at night. And I'm working at all moments in between that. We
sure.
work from home. So, like, there's no commute. There's no
cutoff.
I'm not talking to anybody in my office.
Right.
You know, it's me and Janina. So, you know, with that, like, I just learned so much. And I knew that these kids needed – help. So I remember sending to a university. I mean, bro, yeah, let's put it out. There's the University of Oklahoma. There was a compliance guy there. And I sent him an email that said, it was called Million Dollar Mistakes. And I think it was like Kenny Anderson and Antoine Walker talking about having, you know, I bought mink coats and I was trying to put my people on. And so, you know, and I blew through my money, but like, I didn't know. And I'm like, how would they know? They came from the hood. Like,
who was going to tell them?
Who was going to tell them?
Yeah.
You know, you say you got $100 million. Like, I got $100 million. I'm good forever. No, you're not, forever. Bro. That 100 is 50, right? After agent right after fees, taxes, everything else, right? Then you're going to get churned from all other things. And then extrapolate. Take that 50. And in basketball, it's a little bit different because those guys play longer careers, you know, right? So they make more money. And it's guaranteed. And it's guaranteed.
Yeah.
So it's different money. But extrapolate $50 million out over the course of, let's say a guy retires when he's 30. The next 40 years of his life,
right.
I'm not saying it's a small amount of money. I'm saying it's not as much as they think it is.
Also, when like you're living a lifestyle, no one goes, you're not playing anymore, so you can't live like that.
Right.
So you got to downsize. They're going to go, no, I worked to have this for the rest of my life.
Yeah. Right. And my family, you know, et cetera. Sure. And a lot of these athletes have big hearts. You know, they want to take care of their entire family and they're trying to help everybody out. And this was Antoine Walker's story. So anyway, so I sent this really moving, I remember it was an OTL piece to this guy at Oklahoma. And I'll never forget, bro, I got a response from him. I think I'd sent it to a whole bunch of people, and he was on the list. And I got a response from him that said, box of Kleenex, ? Like, this dude is charged with helping these young men succeed in life.
Yeah.
And the comment was dripping with condescension, jealousy, and a lack of basic care or empathy. And, bro, I was floored. Yeah. Not only that that's how he really felt, but that this dude was dumb enough to put it in an email,
right,
and send it out. And then 5 minutes later, I got that it was Outlook. I won't say his name, but such and such is trying to recall the message.
Really?
He didn't mean to send it to me.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think he meant to send it to me.
Oh, wow.
So anyway, I say all that to say this. You know,
it's good to see that honesty, though.
Yeah, man.
Good for your own perspective.
It was, because it helped me understand, like, I'm probably fighting a losing battle here. This is back in 2009, 2010. So that experience led me to basically say, okay, this business is not going to, it's not going to win. I didn't take the bar straight out of law school because I was like, I'm going to do my own thing. I'm going to go do this. Now I'm like, oh my God, what am I going to do? I owe $200,000 in law loans.
Yeah.
I'm not practicing law. I'm not making $200,000. And those offers from those law firms, they're not there anymore, bro. The entire law, right? The law industry, the legal practice industry had collapsed that year, 2009, 2010. It was done. There was no going back.
Yeah.
So, and I'd worked out here that summer at a law firm in a top 25 global law firm in the financial district, and I'd had an offer, 160 plus 40 bonus. Turned it down. Nope, not doing it. So now it's like, oh man, what am I going to do? So I had become friendly with, as I started gathering all this in-depth information on agents, financial advisors, marketing guys, I had this like very highly, I'd basically given myself or taught myself the equivalent of a PhD in professional service providers for professional athletes.
Right.
Where is that valuable? Nowhere, no. Right? Except as maybe a reporter. And I had befriended some reporters at Yahoo. And so I was like, bro, I'm in a tough spot. Like, I don't know what to do next. I don't want to practice law. I feel like it'd be soul crushing. Can you get me a job doing what you guys do? So Charles Robinson at Yahoo was like, I think I can help you. Let me see what I can do. And he was amazing. You know, he basically went to bat for me, and I got a gig making $27,000 a year. You know this as well as I do.
Sure.
New York City, Los Angeles, you can't breathe the air for $27,000 a year.
Shit, I was making 18.5 in Nebraska. I couldn't imagine making 27 in New York.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah.
I feel like I spent 27.5 on coffee over the year.
Yeah. That's it was crazy, bro. And we were in Portland, so it was like a little bit easier.
But, yeah, still.
But that was that, bro. So I started writing at the intersection of law and sport for Yahoo. And then over time, like, it was this evolution. Like, I went from doing kind of investigative work, trying to basically like highlight how janky the NCAA is and was and is.
Yeah.
And I was like, look, if they're not going to acknowledge that these kids have value in the market, we have to prove that that market exists so that they can no longer deny it. That was the force of my work in the beginning, and also analyzing how players were being separated from their money. Mm. So I investigated financial impropriety committed against players. We'd uncovered multiple Ponzi schemes. Multiple Ponzi schemes.
Really?
And at the time, we weren't calling them Ponzi schemes because defamation is a very real thing, right? As an
right.
investigative
So
report.
If you accuse someone of that, they could come back and
it could
really
be over quick. Yeah. And nobody knows any of this because I've never really talked out loud about it, but I'm not in the industry anymore, so
yeah.
I can now talk about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, bro, like we saw it. And so what we were doing is we'd identified it. There's a lawyer out of Miami, Florida. His name's Chase Carlson, and he's phenomenal. He's a securities attorney who essentially his entire life is going to get money back for people who have been ripped off. And he specializes in working for athletes, which is a problem in and of itself, right? Like he recognized that there was enough, there were enough athletes being ripped off.
Sure.
That he needed to specialize in that area in order to help them get their money back. Because if you know all of the players in the industry, we hear who the scammers are before it happens, right? So we'd identified, he and I, working kind of like really hard in our opposite spheres, but sharing information to the extent that we could, when we could, to help each other get further down the road on like what's really happening here.
It's weird too, because I feel like it's one of the few times where there's no public sympathy. Like there's this weird notion that when an athlete gets ripped off, well, he should have been smarter with his money. Like even I'm watching this big baller brand stuff right now, and everyone's kind of going, man, that's what LeVar gets. And I'm like, dude just fucked him out of $1.5 million. Like, if your really good trusted business partner did that to you, you'd be at the barbershop or you'd be at the bar like going, isn't this crazy? And everyone would be saying, wow, what an asshole. But instead, we're going, what a bad dad. Like, it's weird. Like, we don't – when an athlete loses money, it's like it's like we bemoan them for having God-given talents. You know, like they didn't deserve to be that athletic anyway. It's weird.
So this is why – I appreciate and respect you so much. And it's interesting. So this is the first time I've done anything on camera, really anything, since I left the NFL Network. And, you know, the reason why it was such an easy yes for me is because you are an advocate for players. Like, ever since I've been aware of you, you've been writing for players.
Always.
And I wish more people would do that.
For me, it's like this empathy thing too, and I don't know if it's because like I'm friends with a bunch of them, and like I've met them over time, but like once you, also like there's this weird thing like I watch the media and they like always go so hard in one direction and we paint them out like Odell was always fascinating to me. I'm like, here is this kid and he's being made to be this like huge creation, and I just don't ever think anyone looks and goes, he's 25,
right?
Like, he's a 25-year-old person that if he tweets something out, it will be on SportsCenter.
Yep.
If he posts a video, it'll be on House of Highlights.
Right.
And I just am always fascinated at, like, they're not all Mrs. Kardashian. They're not all these media manipulators that can, like, see the system and know the impact. A lot of them are just normal people that have a gift. And we turn on them so quickly. And it's, and I appreciate you saying that, of course, and I appreciate you sharing it, but please continue with where you're going.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. It's gross. And just real quick before we move on, you know, however you feel about LeVar, how could you not feel horrible for Lonzo?
Right.
He was 19, bro. Like, he trusted people around him, and he got ripped off. So why is it not like, man, this is horrible, let's do something about it? So to your point, we can cover these Ponzi schemes. We're letting, you know, players know behind the scenes, hey man, I've obtained promissory notes that are very troubling for two separate investments that I know that you have put money into. I know this is jarring. I'm not trying to scare you. What I am trying to do is make clear to you that we have uncovered enough signs that these are dubious investment schemes. That was what we had to use before, you know, actually saying Ponzi.
They were
dubious investment schemes. And there's this thing on FINRA, so the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority or something like that. So on their website, and all athletes should know this.
Yeah.
There's something that, I don't know if they still have it, but back when we were doing this in 2013, 12, something like that, they had something that was called Scam Check. Bro, it is, I'm not kidding. It's like, is it a promissory note? Is it a private? Yes. Okay. Red flag starts to Click up.
Right.
Did they roll over your note? Yes. Clicks up a little bit more. Is the interest rate, you know, whatever it was, 20% or more? Yes. It's a scam.
Really?
Like, it's not hard. Like, no. Literally, just go, right? And all of these dudes were, some of the players were talking to us behind the scenes and sharing with us, like, man, here are some of the things were happening. This financial advisor was recruiting me at the strip club. You know, he'd pick me up in a limo, drop a big bag, like, give me a Gucci bag full of money, you know. And then I knew behind the scenes this financial advisor was paying intermediaries $5,000-$10,000 per meeting, okay, just to get to the player in the first place. So you're looking at it, you're like, okay,
to
wait.
To portray this type of stuff,
yes.
Right?
Now, Pete, this is where it gets really fascinating. So, okay, one of the beautiful things about the financial advisor industry is there is a decent amount of transparency, especially when guys are at what we call RIA, so they're kind of independent shops. And you can see how much money they have under management. All right, so you go and you say, like, okay, how much money does this dude have under management? Well, he has, let's use easy numbers for ease of math. He's got $100 million under management. All right, how do financial advisors make their money? They get 1% of money under management. Okay, cool. He's making $1 million a year. He's got a staff of 5 people, plus himself. What kind of house is he in? Oh, he's in a 7,000-square-foot mansion. What kind of cars does he drive? Oh, he's got 3 cars. Mazzi, Ferrari, Lambo, right? And you're like, bro, something is not adding up. Like, if you got 600 or 500 after your million is cut down and you got to pay staff, like, how are you living like this as a standalone? We're not even getting into how are you dropping bags on people with $100,000 or $20,000 or $50,000,
right?
And how are you giving a dude $10,000 stack on his way to the strip club in a limo? Like, how are you and paying $5,000 to the intermediary? Like, it doesn't add up. So you're automatically on high alert. Like, bro, something's happening here.
Right.
Like, something is amiss. Okay, so to your point, a lot of people are like, ah, that's just, you know, dumb jocks. They should know better. Why? And then additionally, when you look at it and you really look at it from an empathy-focused place, you're like, these kids are often very vulnerable. They don't see themselves as kids, and we can use young men to honor what they're becoming, right?
Sure.
But the bottom line is they just are not equipped to deal with this world that they're being thrust into. And then cultural norms, a lot of these financial advisors who do this stuff prey upon them because they know that these are the things that these kids have been brought up to believe are the things that they should seek out, that they want, that they need. When you're 21 years old, you can be lured, a 21-year-old red-blooded American male, right? You can be lured into a lot of things that you can't be lured into when you're 31.
Yeah,
right?
You've seen it a little bit.
Exactly.
If I was a college kid and I'm getting ready for the draft, I would think that people dropping off bags would be the norm.
100%.
I would think that people telling me that I'm going to invest in the next Starbucks or I'm going to have like my own chain of something, like this is what comes with the NFL. And then when my community comes back to me and they need money, don't worry because I'm investing for my future. And they end up being the biggest man in their entire community. And they're responsible for so much. So even myself, I'm going, I mean, we've all seen the movies.
Yeah.
Give me the cash.
Right.
Drop the bag.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is not a secret, but having spent, you know, I think 5 years as an investigative reporter and doing it at a very high level, 3 years running, I either authored or co-authored or was involved deeply in the, you know, the research leading to kind of the publication of the article. 3 years running, we won an Associated Sports Editors, Associated Press, Sports Editors.
APSE.
APSE, investigative top 5 finish. 1 year we won it, 1 year we were
What were the 3 stories about?
So the first one was, so this is interesting. I'll take a step back real quick. I was co-captain or, you know, junior officer.
Sure.
And so I wasn't leading, I didn't have editorial authority. And so in retrospect, there are things that I would have probably myself, had I been driving the ship, I would have probably done differently just because of where my sympathies lie. But anyway, all that being said, the Miami story was the first one that we were involved in. So the way that came down, bro, I told you I had all this research on agents.
Yeah.
So I was looking at agent firings. Okay, so there's a website that's like an inside, you know, the NFL kind of website, and they tracked firings. So I collected all of these firings, and then I put them into my own spreadsheet and basically created a way to manipulate the data to tell me, oh, this agent has been fired this many times, this agent's been fired this many times. And so I did it, and if you know the game, you know what it is. Like, if a dude goes into Miami and signs 7 first rounders in 2 years, and he never had signed a first rounder in his life,
right,
or was a new agent, high likelihood there's something more to that than him just being the most effective recruiter in the world.
Right, right, right.
You're right?
He's probably not just the smoothest
talker. He's probably just not the best sales, right? There's probably something more going on.
Yeah.
So then you're like, okay, that's interesting. Which is another example of why this data matters and why you can draw out insights if somebody cared enough to do it. And so I'd identified this agent who had done just that. He signed a bunch of players out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And they fired him. Okay, well, now you really know something's going on, because if he was the most effective recruiter in the world and he was the most effective, like, relationship builder in the world, then cats are not firing him like that. But if something else led to them signing with that agent, then it is more likely, and we're talking in broad generalities here as opposed to this particular situation, right? Just to make sure I'm being very careful.
Of course, of course.
Then
you're good at tiptoeing. I would be blatant. I'd be saying people's names.
Yeah, well, when your career, you know, relies on you not getting it wrong, you got to be careful.
Yeah, I gave up journalism.
Yeah, man.
It's we're in a weird, there's so many people out there that are investigating and it's scary, bro.
It is.
It's really intense.
I'll tell you why I think it's important, though, in a second.
Oh, let me say this. I want to say this to the homies. Journalism is the reason there's a school in Glen Mills where they were beating kids for decades and they just closed the doors.
Yeah.
Like, the value of journalism is insane.
It's
like,
huge.
Your ability to, like, save these kids' lives and stuff. I have moved myself more into entertainment.
Yes.
Just because I see the work that it takes, the grind that it requires, and I know that I'm not going to be fair. Like, I can just be honest with myself.
Yep.
But what you guys are doing is invaluable and necessary.
Well, thank you. And yeah, man, I mean, what I would say is, in that instance, what I saw, where I was sitting, the information I saw, I said, okay, here's this agent who was clearly doing something to get these kids in the door. I knew what those somethings generally were in the industry. And then he was getting fired quickly. I wonder who he ran his business with. So I went on SunBiz, which was Florida's state registration website. You know, the law background kind of helped with this stuff. Pulled up the business formation docs. And this dude was... this particular agent had started a business with Nevin Shapiro.
Mm.
They had a sports agency together.
Right.
Well, the reason I knew about Nevin Shapiro, the way this all came to be, is I read an article, I think it was in, like, the Miami Herald. Nevin Shapiro says, you know, he was paying players for years and blah, 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 blah. And so I'm like, and he ran a sports agency. I'm like, really? That's interesting. So that's what it was, bro. Like, I knew who this agent was, how the firing patterns looked.
Yeah.
And I just went and I was like, wait, they have a business together. So I passed that off to Charles.
Yeah.
And then, you know, at that point, I was a contractor, I think, or not, or I can't even remember what my status was, but I wasn't, like, a fully fledged member of the team.
Right.
So he was like, this looks really compelling. Thank you, bro. I got it from here.
Yeah.
And that was that. So, you know, I helped with,
I remember the Nevin Shapiro story. That shit was wild.
And again, I didn't write a line in that story.
Yeah.
So it's like, what I would have focused on and what Charles focused on are probably a little bit different, but he's a fantastic journalist, very rigorous, and, you know, he's amazing at what he does. But again, we're all different human beings, right? So it's like just the way we approached, the way we reported, a little bit different.
Sure.
So anyway, that story ended up becoming what that story was. So the next story I worked on was with Adrian Wojnarowski.
Hmm.
And it was this thing where basically, you know, Charles had kind of told the guys internally, hey, man, this guy's really good with research. And, like, you know, he doesn't have a traditional journalism background, never took a journalism class, never took a,
it's good to have the outside perspective.
Yeah. So Woj was like, hey, I got this story on Billy Hunter at the NBPA. Do you want to work on this with me? You know, I need some help, research, whatever. I was like, yeah. You know, I'm a year and a half in or something.
And now you're getting accepted.
I'm working with Woj, right? Like, I'm like, okay, what's the story? Oh, well, I think there's nepotism at the MBPA. You know, Billy Hunter has, I believe, a number of relationships that call into question whether there's nepotism there. And maybe it could be inappropriate because he's supposed to be an effective steward of the players' money, right?
Right.
Players' PAM, et cetera. So I was like, oh, this is interesting. You know, let's look into it. So I did an absurd amount of research on that, pulling documents, legal documents, filings, you know, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, you can go back and you can read the article now, and we know how it ended up. There was just, bro, it was all right there. Like, it was there. And then Woj, because he's so well sourced. You know, he really handled kind of that element of it. He did the human sourcing, and I did kind of the doc sourcing for the most part.
Wow, every sport screws over its players.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. So that was two, right? So I went from not even being like, it was by Charles Robinson. I was on the contributor line and had nothing to do with writing it. Then this thing with Woj, it was by Woj, and I'm on the byline. It's me.
Right.
This is the next year. And I felt good about it because it's like, at the very least, I'm not saying this is no indictment on Billy Hunter or anyone else in his orbit or family. It was just to say that if you are the president of the Players Association, this is the players' money that pays you and the players' money that you're a steward of, then there should be some, I think there should be radical transparency, like make sure the players know where their money's going, why it's going there, et cetera, right? And so that was it. We just wanted to lay out the truth and let the truth kind of be out there. So that was that. And then the following year, we won something. I'm sorry. I don't know if we did that year. We did another story on Alabama that I was first on the byline.
Gotcha.
Prior to that, there was another story that I won't discuss. It. Like, basically, I helped out on an official capacity.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was that, bro. And then here's what happened. I went in to talk to my bosses at Yahoo, and they were like, hey, we want you to start breaking NFL news. And I was like, I mean, I've been doing investigative reporting for 3 years. Like, there are a lot of people in the representation world that don't like me, you know, like that are afraid of me because
you've been going after them.
Right. And I was like, I just don't know, man. Like, and I don't know if I want to shift gears. Like,
right.
I feel like I'm doing work that matters. I'm trying to help these players take back the power and like, and learn more about how shady these worlds are and, you know, all these different things. And, you know, long story short,
they were like, listen, it's more valuable for us for you to be breaking NFL news.
You're going
to
break news, bro.
Yeah.
Or else. And I was like, okay, I guess I'm breaking news now. Like, because I need this job. I walked into that meeting with a letter of resignation. I had a letter of resignation. I was hot for a number of reasons.
Sure.
Battling over compensation, all kinds of stuff. And I was just like, you know, this is ridiculous. Like, I've been killing it for you guys.
Yeah.
And
yeah, there was a time, I remember the Yahoo investigations, like when one came out, we just assumed it was true.
Bro, it was crazy. And look, 3 years running, this is not to say I worked with legends.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Jeff Passan, Adrian Wojnarowski, Dan Wetzel, Charles Robinson. Like, these dudes are, as far as journalism goes, creme de la creme.
For real.
And I was a nobody in the journalism world. But I had a unique skill set. And so 3 years running, three APSC awards, I was the only one on all of them. Right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, I come from a world where it's like, if you perform, you get compensated.
Sure.
I was like, okay, I've been killing it. I started at 27. Like, what's good? Can I get what, you know, I know what everyone else is making, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Can I get paid? And they were like, yeah, no. Why?
Yeah.
Well, you know, we just don't know. I don't know.
You had to probably build your name more.
What? Yeah. And what does that even mean, Adam? Like, what does that mean?
Well, now it's more like, now it's more cognizant, I think, when I can look and it's, we all have our brands.
Yeah, right?
It's, when you say like the Woj bomb or...
You
know what people stand for. And it's, the amazing thing of what you do is early on, you do all the back filler, which is the meat.
Yeah.
You are the substance.
Yeah.
But they need that picture in the circle with your name next to it.
Yeah, you know no doubt. No doubt. So yeah, anyway, that was that. So that's how I got into breaking news, okay? So now I'm at Yahoo, and I'm doing breaking news.
What was your first big news break that they were like, man, Rand's going to kill this?
Bro, I remember this story so well. So I get a call on Marshawn. All right, so I get a call from a source, and he says, yo, this is back when Marshawn was kind of in a standoff with the Seahawks. He says, yo, Marshawn is in Seattle. He's agreed to a deal. It's going to pay between, I think he said, 11 and 12 per year. But he's got to meet with Paul Allen first. But he's there.
Yeah.
And he told me how he knew he was there. So I was like, official. So I reported it. Before I reported it, though, I had called. That's wrong. I did not report it. I called someone in Marshawn's camp.
Right.
Name him. I'd like to, but I won't.
Yeah.
and I was like, yo, got a tip. I'd help this guy a lot.
Sure.
So you expect, you know, at some point it's going to be good. So I call him. Hey, quick question. I heard that Marshawn is up there. He's about to sign. I want to report this. I just wanted to run it by you real quick. Any reason for me not to report this? It's not true. He's not there. Sure, I got a good source on this. He's not there. Bro.
And Marshawn's camp is so protective of Marshawn.
Yeah.
Like they hear like breaking news and they're like, we don't want to be a part of that.
Right. Which is, look, don't respond. So I got the facts wrong. I didn't call him. I texted him. Okay. I remember I still got the text. So don't respond. Right. Or say can't comment.
Yeah.
You know, or anything. But this dude just straight up lied. And this is somebody I'd been supposedly, you know, building with, whatever. So, you know, 5 minutes later, Schefter breaks it. Marshawn Lynch is up in Seattle. You know, he's going to sign with Paul Allen, or he's got to have a meeting with Paul Allen before he signs. The deal's done.
Right.
Bro, I lost my mind. Because I'm out there, like, trying to make it happen, you know? They won't compensate me for the investigative stuff. I know these other dudes are making way more money than me. Like, I think I deserve it, too. But all good. I'm going to do it in this world. And at the time, it made sense to me. Like, oh, wait. These dudes breaking news are making real bread.
Yes, for real.
Seven figures real bread. Yeah. And like, I want to be the best at that now, you know, because I'd always been about empowering players. And so the investigative stuff I thought was important to shine light on the darkness. But the breaking news stuff was more of like a constant dopamine hit, right? Every day you break some people are like, oh, this is great. Look at this news. Yeah. And your retweets are going crazy.
Yeah, of
whatever.
Course.
So that was the first thing that I remember, but I had written like a pre-article on it. So I was in there right away on Marshawn Lynch news, which out of nowhere, and people were like, aren't you an investigative reporter? Like, what are you doing?
Right.
So bro, then I started like breaking like consistent amount of news, and she has a unique look on it because I just sit there all day going crazy, bro. Like,
is it just tech? Because we're seeing now the Glazers and the Schefters and these guys opening up about what that life is like.
Yeah.
And they talk about it's they're obsessed with it,
yes,
but they bemoan it. And they talk about how it's soul crushing and they can't. I mean, your eyes are lighting up right now. Like,
bro,
every minute of your day.
I'll tell you this.
This is before you got to NFL Network.
This is before I got to NFL Network. Every minute of every single day. I mean, Jay could fill you in better than I could, but like, wake up in cold sweats. You know, you sleep with your phone. I'm not kidding you, bro. I used to sleep with my phone. Okay, so the question is, how am I going to beat Glazer?
Right.
How am I going to beat Schefter? These dudes have been at it for 20, 25 years and are masters of their craft.
They have all the owners. Bro. It's not just the players.
What?
It's the owners, the coaches.
They started with these dudes, right? So I always say every year you go to Indianapolis for the combine, that's NFL spring break. Mm. Right? So cats are out there having a great time. Like, you know, you meet a young a quality control guy with a team, or you meet a young, you know, area scout or whatever, and you guys start building, and then 25 years later, he's a GM or a head coach.
And you're good.
And you're good. That was your guy. You guys were having beer in Indy, you know, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's like, how am I going to beat these guys? So I understood what that was. Basically, what I had to do is I had to map out the space. Okay, who has access to the most amount of information that I can add the most amount of value to their lives? Okay, no one will ever tell you about this insider stuff this clearly, but I'm going to keep it 100% funky.
I appreciate you.
Because it's really not that hard at the end of the day. I didn't think it was.
Yeah.
It was, you needed to treat people well. You needed to be very, very honest. You needed to be prepared to be screwed over by multiple people multiple times and keep on going.
Man.
You had to be willing to be told no or ignored or treated like you don't matter consistently. But I think most importantly is you had to choose a side.
Really?
Yes.
And what are the sides?
and insiders will not address this, okay? So to your point.
Because I've always said there's the player side and then there's the organization side.
Period.
And is that it?
That simple.
Like I said this before. I said Josina right now is the player's reporter. And Schefter is like the owner's reporter. And I would even say Glazer is more of like a coaching reporter. Like, I feel like Schefter is like so imbued with the league. But those guys are definitely more the official. And Glazer, I think, sometimes can go player too. But Josina feels like the player reporter.
She
right
is.
Yeah.
And she's killing it with it. And people take exception with it. And this is something that's real fascinating too. What I would say about Schefter is, and I'll be clear on it, he has always been really good to me. And I have found him to be both in, you know, I'm competing with these guys. I'm trying to figure out a way to beat Schefter, right?
But there's respect too.
There's respect. And I want to beat Schefter.
Because you know his grind.
100%.
Must
bro.
Be insane.
It's insane.
You both wake up holding your phone.
For
and
sure. Like, and we'd communicated a bunch, right? Over time. And so I had a tremendous amount of respect for him. What I would say about Schefter is, I think he does the best job out of any insider of towing the line. Like, yes, he's got deep league and front office connections and coaching connections. He's got connections everywhere.
Everywhere.
But that being said, I've never found Schefter to be like heavily slanted to one side or the other.
Gotcha.
Okay. On the other hand, Rappaport
right.
was somebody who I worked with.
Yeah.
And we, I always had issues.
Okay.
With the way he reported. Okay, so here's where it came from.
Sure.
I've now told you my background, so you'll understand why this was the case. Okay, if it's a 50-50, we got a coin. We're going to flip it. And it's coming down either for the player or the organization in the case of, let's say, Von Miller.
Sure.
There's going to be $1 million difference between what he gets and what the team is able to keep. Then I'm going to report the news in a way that is objective, that is accurate. I'm a lawyer, so yeah. I know how to work with words, but that is going to be, if it is slanted in any direction, more beneficial to the player than the team.
How would you do that?
Okay, so I'm going to give you an example with the Von Miller situation exactly. It was really fascinating. So I was at the combine, okay, and I'm reporting for the NFL Network the first time. I'm doing stand-ups, which I was horrible at. I hated, like,
really?
Oh, bro, I was horrible at it.
I'm so good at bullshitting for those things.
I was terrible at stand-ups, bro.
That's because you didn't do the traditional upbringing through journalism.
I can do this all day, but as soon as I stare into the black hole, bro, I'm like,
it is.
It's bad.
I will explain. Like, I say this to like young journalists all the time. Like, you need to hate the dot.
Yeah.
Like, it's a dot that, like, I remember. I would eventually look at it and go, fuck you.
Yeah, yeah.
Where I was like, you have nothing. Like, you're nothing. Like, it's not about thinking about the people. It's just like that right there.
Yeah.
You're nothing.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It takes time.
Yeah.
Like, it's just reps on it.
Well, this is why you're a pro and I was an amateur.
Yeah, but like, you understand law and I can like speak about NCAA tournament shit. Like, it doesn't matter. My shit's meaningless.
You don't give yourself enough credit. But anyway.
So you're at the combine.
So I'm at the combine. I'm getting ready to report, right? Okay, so John Elway walks up on the podium. He's in the room with all the reporters.
Yeah.
I'm right outside the room getting ready for my stand-up. I had information. I can't identify exactly what, but I had it.
Yes.
Physically. I could see it. I could read it.
And this is going to be what, Von Miller's contract?
What's going on in the contract situation? Okay, so Elway goes up to the podium, okay? What happens is the team consistently tries to float information behind the scenes and through their reporters
yes.
that are friendly with them that is beneficial to them, okay? Now, the purposes of this information, and we're not talking about Elway and the Broncos, but just generally.
General front office.
Generally, is to sway public opinion to put pressure on the player because they know that they're emotional and invested, right? And they do, and the team does this 10, 15, 20 times a year.
Mm.
This is the player's first time, and there's so much at stake.
Right.
Right?
Because it's their life.
It's their life, right? How do I take care of my family? I've been fighting my whole life for this. I'm risking, you know, at this point, CTE, paralysis, right? Like all the things that we see that these players,
sure.
right? So it's a very real thing.
And their window's small as it is.
Right. And for the teams, it's more like, this is business, another transaction. So he wants a million, and we want to pay him 750. How do we get to 750? Okay, float information that he's a diva. Float information that he's, a locker room cancer, right? All the things we hear. Float information that, he doesn't know the playbook, right? So we hear all this stuff every time.
What would you, when we're seeing stories come out about a player's character, what percentage of the time do you think it's coming from the team itself?
Huge percentage.
Really?
Yeah, someone on the team. Someone on the team. You know, I'm not saying it's coming from the front office all the time, but you can identify. Just watch, like, bro, watch these reporters. It's not hard. You can tell who their sources are.
Of course.
It's simple.
Yeah.
Right? So, at the end, I'm not saying, like, exactly necessarily, but you're like, oh, that's a team side source. Oh, that's an agent.
Right.
Oh, that's a marketing guy.
Right.
So anyway, Elway walks up and he says, something to the effect of, I think, we've exchanged proposals. That was not true. It was factually inaccurate. There was a proposal sent to them.
Right.
And they had not sent one back. They're stalling this guy out
right.
in the midst of a negotiation, right? Because that guy's
but
getting...
But they're telling the public that we're engaging. We're talking.
We're engaging.
It's fine.
Yeah, we're going back and forth.
And so
we're trying
Von's
to make this
gonna
get done.
Going to be at home going, I'm not fine at all. You're
correct.
Not answering my emails.
Correct. Correct. So this is the and but can't say that, right?
Right.
And the teams are chess players, bro. So this, he stands up there, he's polished, he's a football hero, and he's saying, yeah, we're exchanging. So everyone's like, oh, that's what he's doing. All right, my stand-up was next. So he's walking down the podium, and then I go live. And I'm like, I don't know if I addressed it head on, but I was like, I'm told that there has been no exchange of proposals, that a proposal was sent to the Broncos, but they've not yet responded. So I'm directly contradicting Elway.
What we just heard.
Bro, yeah. I had an email in my inbox so fast from my boss at the time. Like, he was hot, bro. Like, you can't contradict, you know, whatever he was, GM of the team. Like, and I'm like, but it's the truth. I got the documents, bro. Like, what do you mean? You know, and now I'm saying anonymous source because I couldn't identify who my source was.
Is it tough being at the NFL Network because they are the league?
Bro, it's state TV.
Right.
It's state TV.
Yeah, but they don't sell it like that.
It's state TV. Now, let me qualify, okay? Because I know that this, I know where this could go.
Okay.
There are a lot of tremendous reporters.
Yes.
I have a tremendous amount of respect for Steve Wyche. I really like Bucky Brooks. He was always phenomenal to me. MJD is dope, right? So there are people there.
All the guys that work there, but like, you know, systematic things are created for systems.
It's state TV. Like, and I'll give you an example because it's again, it is not that difficult.
Right.
How did Rappaport end up where he's at? Because, bro, he gets information spoon-fed to him because he will report what the teams want him to report.
Right.
Okay, well, what do they want him to report? They want him to report stuff that harms players.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Can I be honest with you?
Please.
I had heard that you were being told to give him stuff and that they were trying to build him up as the lead NFL reporter.
Bro, my experience over there, and this is something that, you know, I've never spoken about, but I lasted 14 months. All right. I got out, you know, as quickly as I could. It was kind of similar to the law thing. I just knew it wasn't for me. And the reason was
because... But you broke a lot of shit in a short amount of time.
Thank you, bro. I mean, I worked really hard at it.
Yeah.
And I felt like I'd cracked the code. I knew how to do it.
Yeah, there was a free agency period where it was like, I remember going, who the fuck's this Rand guy? Because like there was the one free agency, and I want you to get back to NFL Network.
Yeah.
There was the one free agency where everybody locked and loaded their tweets for the tampering period.
Yeah.
And when that happened, it was like, ga, 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 ga. And I remember it was like, you had 40 of them and like Schefter had like 30, but it was like, it was the first time we like had the open tampering period.
Yeah.
And I remember I was like, who the fuck is this Rand guy? I remember being in this office and being like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I remember that's how I remember me like being introduced to you for the first time.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, thank you. I mean, it was one of those things where, you know, I'm aggressive. I'm ambitious. I want to be great. If I'm going to do it, I want to be great, right?
Yeah.
Whatever it is. Tiddlywinks.
Yeah.
I want to be great. And so at that point, I was like, bro, and that's why you saw me breaking news on a trash can, because it was like, bro, I had no office. They would consistently, I'd break a piece of news and they would credit him for it.
Why do you think that was?
I know why it was. He was their guy. He was the guy that they wanted to push forward because he was going to toe the team line. Mm. I was pro player.
Right.
It was a problem from moment one. And then I was brought in by two guys who, after I came in the door, left. Okay? So
that's tough in any job.
Right. Like within like 3 months, right? So they signed me to a 2-year deal. They're like, oh, we want you to come in here and compete with Rappaport. That's what I was hired to do.
Right.
Come in here and compete with Rappaport because we're not sure he's going to still be here. And your guys' contracts are running concurrent, basically. Mm. So at the end of these 2 years, he might be on his way out, and you might be the guy. So I'm like, for sure, competition, I'm with that. Like, mano y mano, let's see which one of us can make it happen. So at first, I was trying to be collaborative. And the first story was, I remember, it was a Dez Bryant story. So Dez Bryant was in the midst of...
It's not the videotape, is it?
Nah, he was in the midst of his contract negotiation, okay? I had great sourcing on it.
Right.
And so I knew what was going on. I went to my boss at the time, and I was like, yo, here's what I got. He's like, who are your sources? This is right when I got there, bro, like first couple weeks. I'm very uncomfortable because I don't share.
Yeah, is that even customary to do?
No, well, maybe. But again,
depending on how big the story is for the...
Or the outlet. Right. If, when we were doing investigative stuff, we had to share our sources almost all the time with at least the lawyers.
Gotcha.
You know, before it
goes out. Cover their asses to know that they're...
Who told you? You can't say anonymous with, like, what is it?
Yeah.
But investigative is also based on documents, right? Whereas breaking news is really based on your relationships. Because you're trusting the person that told you this, for the most part, that they're not screwing you, that you're not going to put something out there you can get killed for. Rappaport gets killed all the time because of this.
Yeah.
So anyway, long story short, it was Dez Bryant. I knew what was going on with this deal. And I went to my boss and I'm like, here's what I got. I'm going to go with it, because he said I had to come to him before I could in the beginning. And he was like, I need you to work with Rappaport on it because he's got team side sources. All right? He's talking to... he's talking to somebody with the Cowboys.
Right.
This Hyatt. So you need to talk to him. So I said, okay. So I I'm like, I don't want to do this, but this is an olive branch.
I'll be
let me see. Yeah, we can. If me and him team up, we can go out there and we can beat Schefter.
Yes.
And that's the goal, right?
Like the former NFL Network employee.
Right.
Let's take him down.
Who they did dirty.
Right.
Who they did super dirty.
And he's doing okay.
Yeah, he's doing great. Yeah. Good for him. So, and didn't deserve the way that he was treated. So anyway, I basically, you know, went to Rappaport with it, and then he screwed me. He reported it, like, basically stole the news out from under me, you know? Yeah, like deprived me of credit. Like, it was just wild because it was the first experience, right? So, like, there was a way, if it was Schefter, Schefter would have been, you can notice this, he does this a lot, from Josina Anderson and me.
Yes.
Right?
He does do that a lot.
Yeah, and I'd had, like, issues
or from Mort and me.
Yes, yeah. Right? And he'll credit the other person first. And, like, and as a reporter, bro, that's all you got is your credit, right? Like,
yes.
And it matters when it comes time to get paid. This is why it all matters, because when I go in and be like, I need to pay, they're like, oh, you're not the one that was first on the byline. And I'm like, you told me I could. I gave it to him. Like,
yes.
What's going on? I'm being a good team player. I'm getting penalized. So anyway, that happened. I was like, okay, not working with this dude anymore. Clearly a snake.
Yeah.
Not interested.
All it takes is one time.
That was it, bro. And he worked remotely. He was in Dallas and I'm in LA. So anyway, that was that. Now it's like, okay, bro, now I'm going to beat your ass.
Right.
Every day. Like, you got to deal with me. There's no way you're going to beat me at this job, period. I don't care that you've been doing it longer than me. I don't care that the teams are sending you information, you know, directly because they've been told to,
right?
Or any of that. You
I'm
know,
I'm going to use that against you. I'm going to.
Yes.
I'll let you rely on that, and I'll go every other way.
Now you should go start your insider career because now you got it.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what it was.
That's
I was like,
the
yo,
the way, bro.
He is state TV. Period. So if you have something that you want to do to benefit a player, that is not the outlet you should be using. Because I promise you, he will harm you someday if he has the opportunity to do so. Okay. Now, the way he would do that is, for instance, I think in the Von Miller situation, though I could be wrong, but I think in the Von Miller situation, but let's just use this as an example.
Sure.
He would be the one to float. The team has offered him the largest contract in NFL history.
He pretty much did that with the Le'Veon Bell story, if
mm-hmm.
I remember right.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, they offered him an $80 million contract.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone else came out later and was like, it only has 17 guaranteed for the entire contract. But he never said that.
Correct. We know what it is, bro. That's bullshit.
Yeah.
These NFL deals are illusory. They're not real.
It's insane.
That $80 million is not 80, right?
No.
And it never is. And so anyway, I started achieving like tremendous amounts of success as a result of that, because I basically put myself out there as I'm pro player and I'm pro agent, because the agent's the one that helped the players
right.
set up their families for life.
And I'm on NFL Network, so it's like validity. Too.
Period.
Yeah.
But now again, I'm a lawyer,
right?
And you have to be objective. So people don't understand
the
nuance.
You're great. You're great. I'm very subjective.
People don't understand the nuance here. You know, you can be objective and accurate and still. Every reporter, don't let any reporter ever tell you, I'm completely objective. No, you're not, bro.
No.
You grew up a certain way. You experience certain things. You see the world a certain way. You vote for, you know, one party or the other. Like,
right. It's not just about what team you grew up rooting for.
Correct.
It's your upbringing and your feeling about an entire group.
Socioeconomic
of
background.
Yes.
You know, for instance, I think Rappaport was the son of an oncologist who grew up in LI or something like that. I grew up on food stamps and foster care. All right? Different ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
Right?
Great Gatsby shit.
Yeah, I mean, different ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
So naturally, we're gonna see the world a little bit differently. So long story short, bro, you know, I became very successful very quickly at breaking news because I became known as somebody that could be trusted to not absolutely promote the player's agenda at all times in all cases, because if the player's wrong, the player's wrong.
Yeah.
But that if there was a team saying, we've offered him the largest contract, then I would be the one to say, actually, it's not the largest contract. Here's how much money has been guaranteed. This is why it's not a good deal for this player. Here's what would be a good deal for this
right.
player. And because I had the analytical background, I would also go out and I'd look for like Von Miller. I remember I did a 3-minute piece on NFL Network or something where I was like, this is why Von Miller is special. It's not just about the sacks, okay? He's coming off the edge. Teams, I talked to a bunch of team personnel. They're like, we have to game plan for Von Miller
right.
in a way that creates DeMarcus Ware or turns him into a terror
right.
on the other side, right? So DeMarcus Ware may be putting up bigger stats or equal stats, but we're chipping Von every time he comes around the edge
right.
with a tight end, because you have to game plan for him.
And that means DeMarcus is one-on-one.
DeMarcus is going to eat, right?
Yeah.
So that's unquantifiable value. Right, Von is making DeMarcus better.
Yeah, not even PFF's going to chart that.
Right, so you had to like, so it was this combination of like PFF analytical data, right? And then like stats, this many sacks, this many pressures, et cetera. And then also human sources. So I felt like, bro, I felt like I was in the Matrix. Like I'd like, you know, I figured it out.
Achieved one.
I cracked the code, bro. I was ready. So that free agency period, yeah, I crushed it.
Yeah.
Like crushed it. And that's because, and I don't say that to be like a pompous jerk. I say it because I did. I busted my ass.
Yeah.
Every day I earned that. You know, I treated people well. I told the truth. You know, I fought for it. And so at the end of that free agency period, the dude that runs, you know, the NFL operations over at ESPN, who I'd kind of been talking to behind the scenes because I thought that that was my exit strategy.
Gotcha.
Was like, yo, I chart this stuff.
Yes, they do. And they have like the competitions and all that. Yeah.
And I finished second that year.
Wow.
Schefter was first. I was second.
What year was that?
2016, 17.
Yeah.
Something like that. And yeah, man, I finished second, bro. Like ahead of, you know, Rappaport, ahead of Garofalo, ahead who I also like. Garofalo's a good dude.
I've never met him, but I've only heard good things.
Yeah, I like Garofalo. I know him very well, but I like him. Anyway, yeah, it was this very fascinating thing, right, where like I was like, oh, shit, this is crazy. Like, I just did this. Okay, but the whole time they're taking my breaks and they're crediting him on the ticker. Ian Rappaport says Casey Hayward signs for X amount of dollars. And I'm like, no, bro, the tweets are right there.
Yeah.
12:34, me. 12:36, him. Like, how is it not at the very least make it a co-break? You know, according to this guy and Rappaport, you know,
right.
Happened. It wasn't happening, bro. And I, like, of course, I was a former investigative reporter, so I'm taking screenshots of everything. I'm keeping track of it. I got proof of it.
But like you said, that's your value proposition. That's what allows you to continue your own career. Is those.
Yeah. And meanwhile, you know, of course, I'm like, okay, great. This guy that I'd like to work for over at ESPN said that I finished second. This is awesome. So anyway, that was that. Okay, but then shortly thereafter, and I was making these issues known internally. Like I wasn't just sitting there like, hey, this is great. You guys are, you know, screwing me out of credit consistently. Yeah. Like I know what's happening. They put him on TV to discuss my breaks. Like I never cared about TV. But I understood that was, to your point earlier, right? You got to build your brand.
Exactly.
In order, and I'm like, at least when I get a win, you guys are, I never got news from the league. Never.
Yeah.
Right? This dude was getting news from the league crazy. So if it's in free agency, that news is driven in many, many ways by the people who help to represent the players.
Right.
So that's why I crush that. Okay?
Right.
When it's like trades, the team knows that first.
Of course.
So that's why you'd see other reporters, Rappaport included, do very well there. When it's coaches, there are a couple coaching agents who have the vast majority of the coaches.
Yes.
And I hadn't built those inroads he had, so he would kill there. So like they were like, I could pick my spots. But free agency is the big stage.
Yes.
So I was like, okay, I'm going to aim for the biggest stage, and I'm going to kill that.
Yeah.
So that was that. So shortly thereafter, basically, you know, this boss of mine kept doing crazy things. So one thing, I'll give you an example, another way that's kind of nefarious, I think, though I don't think everyone means it this way. But when I would report news, I would say Von Miller earned, you know, whatever it was, $60 million deal, worth, you know, however much million in guarantees. I get an email from the boss. Don't say they earned the deal. They didn't earn it, you know, say agreed to or this or that. But they never had a problem with somebody saying the team gave the player $60 million. They didn't give them shit. Again, they're risking CTE paralysis, right? Like all these things. Like they're not giving them anything. They've been fighting their whole lives for this. So,
and it could seem like an innocent word choice.
Right. But it's
over time.
Yes.
You're projecting a certain kind of notion.
Yes. Like I said, it's kind of nefarious. Again, I don't think that the people that say earn versus give or whatever, I don't think they're necessarily doing it on purpose. Okay. But I was very purposeful. I would say earned because I believe they did. So I wrote back. I remember I wrote back my boss. You know, I wish you would stop nitpicking me on things that are of particular value to me, given all of the roadblocks that you guys have put in my way, or you have put in my way, because this is something that is part of what makes me good at my job. And ultimately, it's good for you. I'm helping you guys beat ESPN, which is the job. That's the job, right? Like, take a step back. That's the job. We need to beat
ESPN.
It's a
numbers game. It's a zero-sum game.
100%. So, you know, I was just like, and you're wrong, by the way. He did earn it because it's a calculation by the team in the market of what that player's value is based on his past production and a projection of what he's going to be worth to the team moving forward. But at that moment in time, he has earned that deal. Whether you agree with that or not is irrelevant. Whether he continues to perform at that clip in the future or not is irrelevant. At that moment in time, he earned the deal, period. bro, they obviously did not like that, and I knew that I was not for long
there. No, the way you're talking to your boss, I did not think you were going to last.
It was not long there.
No.
It was not for long there.
No.
And, you know,
that's a bold email, bro. That's a bold email.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, I have a very low bullshit quota. Like,
yeah.
I just, you know, if it's wrong, it's wrong.
Yeah.
And if it's right, it's right. And he was wrong. You know, not only wrong in terms of the way that he was analyzing the use of the words,
sure.
but he was also wrong insofar as he was perfectly willing to continue to perpetuate something that harmed players, even if it's in a very small way, right? It's
right.
You add it all up. But, you know, to me, again, it's nefarious because at the end of the day, if a player gets $1 million less, that can be a big, big, big deal for him in the
sure.
long run. But for the teams,
nothing.
Stan Kroenke's not tripping if you, I mean,
no.
It's fine.
He could misplace $1 million in his loafer and he's fine.
He's fine.
Yeah.
So yeah, man, that was that. And then, you know, shortly thereafter, I don't have to get into too many more details. I was like, we had a frank conversation. I was like, listen, I'm going to go. I got 10 months left on my deal. You know, let's discuss how we can handle this. I can either sit here for the next 10 months and
right.
we can keep doing this, but we all know it's not working.
Right.
Or, you know, essentially, you guys can cut me a check and I'll go.
Yeah.
So after some back and forth, they were like, all right, we're going to cut you a check. So I was like, great. I got 10 months of runway.
Right.
I was considering coming to work here.
Really?
Yeah. I was real high on Bleacher. I thought Bleacher was like, you know, on an uptick. I loved it. Culturally, I thought I
sure.
fit better over here
yeah.
than I fit there. And I had talked to Bleacher before I chose to go to NFL Network. So I was this close to signing with Bleacher Report.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's
yeah.
awesome.
And it just didn't – at the time, it was like – you know, NFL Network is the next step to ESPN.
100%.
So I was like, all right, I'm going to go to NFL Network. But it was like literally like very close. So then after that, you know, I was talking to Bleacher Report and I'm still talking to ESPN. And ESPN was like, hey, we love you, but there's a headcount issue. So this is like September. I left the NFL first week of the 2016 season or 17 season. And they were like, there's a headcount issue though. And I just finished second in their –
yeah.
Right? So if you're a salesman, you sell 100 widgets, you get paid 10% on those 100 widgets.
Right.
You know, you sell 99 widgets, you get paid on those 99. If you sell 80, you get right. So I'm like, okay, well, wait, I'm second. I sold more widgets than
yeah.
this guy who's making 400, right?
Yeah.
I sold more widgets than this guy who's making a million.
Right.
So I got to fall like somewhere in between what Schefter's making. I'm not going to dig in his pockets. And, you know,
yeah.
I actually don't know 100%, but I knew I had a good idea.
Yeah, sure.
And I'm like, bro, I'm like significantly underpaid at this point. Like, I'm ready to get paid. I've performed.
Yeah.
Same thing. Yeah, no. All right. This is not something that makes any sense to me, but okay. So what happened is ESPN says headcount issue. I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. I just killed it. Like,
yeah.
why, if you're a free agent in basketball or football, or someone's going to pick you up.
Right.
Or sales or anything.
Right.
So I don't idle well, as you can imagine. And
no,
so
I can tell. Yeah, I can tell.
So she and I started talking and I'm like, you know what? Like, let's just tell stories. Let's tell stories the way we want to tell the stories. I'm sick of getting emails from my boss telling me I can't say this or I can't say that. Like, I just want to help these players get the most out of their lives. Like, they deserve that, right? And again, I'm not saying players are universally the best human beings or blameless.
Yeah, or without mistake.
Or without yeah. mistake, right? Like, there's it's humanity.
We yes. all,
but at the same time, you know, they have a chance to be beacons of light for so many others, and they have a multiplying effect. If they succeed and they do well and they set a good example, that can impact tens of thousands, if not millions, of young men and women all around the world, and that is powerful.
Sure.
So I wanted to empower them to do better. So she was like, that sounds good. You know, what are you thinking? So I was like, I'm going to go out and sell a series. And I was like, we're going to start a production company. She was like, great, let's do it. Right? She's crazier than me because that's crazy. Like, wait a second, you're making this much money. And I
yeah.
was, though I was underpaid, I was not making money.
Right, right, right.
And I was like, look, just for now, while we wait on ESPN, they said, you know, we can talk again at the end of the season. Let's try and do this. So right away, we ended up selling a big series. And it was you know, at a price point that I was like, wait, I just sold a series that allows me to make the vast majority of what I was making before.
Wow.
And I don't have to answer
no.
to suits anymore,
right?
Right? Like, I'm working with
people. Have we seen this series?
No one, I don't think, we'll see. Maybe
okay.
5-6 years from now, people will. I can't really get into that too much.
Okay.
Like, it didn't end up coming out. But it was our first foray into production. It was wild. We were traveling all over the world. We were filming, young, high-profile guys, and during this really coming-of-age story, it was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like, we really enjoyed
it, man.
It was
a cool experience.
It was awesome. And but long story short, at that point, I'm still thinking, initially, like, I'm going to go to work at ESPN, but once we got this thing, I was like, wait, I'm probably not going back to work because we can just do this. And
right.
And now I'm not going to be compensated based on what somebody thinks of me. I'm going to be compensated on
what I do,
what we do, how many people are willing to pay us to continue doing what we do,
right.
You know, et cetera. And so that was that, bro. Like, and then we found out later ESPN laid off all those people after this.
Oh.
So they were not BSing me. It was
they were
getting ready to lay off 200 plus people or whatever.
Right.
So they did have kind of a freeze and they weren't expanding necessarily aggressively or whatever.
They went through their downturn and all that.
So that was that, man. I mean, that's how we ended up in the storytelling space. And then from there, you know, as you mentioned, we went on to do this piece with Zion, who's a phenomenal young man, phenomenal family, obviously phenomenally talented. But like, we really wanted to focus on how good a kid he was.
Right.
You know, how good his folks were.
Right.
How cool his little brother Noah was, you know, and just we wanted to, again.
Yeah, aspects that really weren't publicized.
100%.
We not know just him doing dunks and all that stuff.
We know he's a freak athlete.
Like, I thought what was great about the Jalen story is Jalen, year in and year out, it's, hey, Jalen, here's a list of people. Shit on them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that was, like, his character, his willingness to that bravado. But to kind of see him there with his family and the training and realize, dude's in a garage.
Yeah.
Dude's in his driveway.
Yeah.
Dude's in a field. This isn't like some multi-million dollar like workout facility. He's not banging heads with other top NFL players. It's just him and his pops.
Yeah.
What did you learn about Jalen in that process?
Man, he's such a good kid. Good young man. He's not a kid anymore. He's a young man. But he's just a good dude, and his dad is phenomenal. And you know, it was this intimacy. We're in Smyrna, Tennessee. It's a small little suburb outside of Nashville. And his father was a fireman. His brother, Jamal, is a fireman as well, following his dad's footsteps, was also an athlete and played in college. And then his brother has, you know, his son, and they all are working out together in the garage. You know, this dude was an all-pro.
Yeah.
And he's the, at the time, like the hottest young defensive player in the league.
Easily.
Right? And, you know, what you learn about him real quickly is he didn't get to where he was because he's a talker. He talks because he's put in the work.
Yes.
He's earned the right to go out there. And if that's a part of his persona, and he always, I think there was a story that they told us where he always thought he wanted to be in the WWE.
Really?
Right? He wanted to be this guy.
That'd
be
great.
Like, yeah. And so that's part of it. That's part of his, like, that's how he gets himself hyped up. I'm going to tell you, you can't beat me. And then you're going to go try and beat me because I just told you, you can't beat me. I can't let that happen.
Right.
And I've got the physical skill to back it up. And oh, by the way, no one's outworking me.
Yes.
You know, period. And, you know, there was this, it's very endearing because here he is with his father and his brother and his nephew. And he's a man of the people, right? Like, he's not too big for that. And he's recruiting other athletes to come out. Gus Bradley came out and visited him. So that was that. And to your point, like, yeah, we covered in the piece like that he talks trash, but we all know that. So it's like you touch it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I talk trash. Here's why I talk trash. But then what we wanted people to see is him playing with his nieces, right, in the house. How much he loves his mother, how much he loves his father, how much they love him.
Yeah.
You know, how they've all, every single one of them, invested in his success.
Sure.
Right. And so that was so important to us to do. And you know, it was one of those things where I remember you did that whole thread about, you know, athletes doing good.
Yeah.
And I appreciated that, man, because like
it was right after there was like these arrests and there was all these stories, and there's that one part of the off season where, man, we love to make NFL players seem like pieces of shit.
Right.
They're all collectively this like masked marauder that just does bad things.
Right.
And it's all I really did is I just typed in every team name and I wrote the word charity afterwards.
Yeah.
And it's incredible how many stories pop up.
Yeah.
But the problem is we're not interested when the team drops off turkeys
right.
or goes to the homeless shelter.
Right.
We go, oh, that's a local news story.
Yeah.
That's in the D block.
Yeah.
You know, that's right before sports. It's the good, but nobody really cares.
Right.
But it's the collective
right.
where you go, oh my God, what have I been doing?
Yeah.
And you don't realize, okay, these are guys, and so much are on these plates, and so many people are coming to them, but they still have the time to do these amazing things.
Right.
But, you know, we'd rather hear about the crazy stuff.
Right.
We'd rather hear about the bad stuff.
Yep.
That stuff sells newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
But when you can see it in one stream of consciousness, and it's overwhelming. Like, I'm sure that somebody went through like 20 of them and was like, we get it.
Yeah.
All right. We understand what these guys do. I don't think you do. Here's 20 more.
Yeah.
Because they need to know.
Yeah.
Because you just get annoyed by it. Because every time I sit with an athlete, I can't talk bad about them. Like, right. I have a really hard time.
Yeah.
Because they're such good people. And you realize where it's either the pressure that's pulling them that way, or it's one moment where they had one bad thing, and yet we get to judge them for that one moment the rest of their lives.
Yeah, it's absurd.
But everybody else gets second chances.
Right.
But for them, oh, you're the guy that hit that person.
Yeah. Like, bro, have you never in your life swung on somebody?
If I had a camera on me.
Yeah.
I got into a fight with a coworker when I was a reporter in Nebraska.
Right.
Dude took a phone and threw it at a girl, and I tackled him on a bar stool. And it was one of those things where, like, I'm in a bar, and I have him pinned against the wall, and I'm saliva's coming out, whatever. And it was one of those things where I'm in my apartment later, and I'm going, if anyone fucking had a camera on me, I'm fired.
It'd be a wrap.
I'm done.
Yeah.
But luckily, cell phones weren't that big back in 2009, and I was okay. But, like, we've all had moments. If you've lived life, you've had moments
yeah.
that you're glad people didn't capture.
Yeah.
I've been on stage freestyling at 4 o'clock when a bar's closing, and I said some shit I probably shouldn't have said. But I'm okay saying it now.
Yeah.
Because I want to own my truth. But
yeah.
we don't let these athletes own their truth a lot.
Right. Right.
We want them to fit into where they're supposed to be. You know, I'm not a role model by Chuck. You have to sometimes stake your claim
yeah.
to get away with things. But I just wish it wasn't like that at all.
Yeah. Well, this is why you're going to keep winning, bro. And you know, you're young. Your star is on the rise. You know, I was telling Janine on the way over here, and I'm like, I have no idea what we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
But I love what LEFCO stands for.
Thanks,
you
man.
Know, it's true. And the players are going to notice it too, man. Like, as you continue to grow and you know, Bleacher has given you this incredible platform to be you, right?
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that's so dope about this particular organization. You know, players are going to see that, man. And they're
yeah.
looking for safe spaces, right? They're looking for people that are going to promote them, that are going to look out for them.
To what you were saying before about, like, NFL sources, the interesting thing about BR is when we started, we always bemoaned not having NFL rights.
Yeah.
So, like, this is what people will notice. They'll hear us talk about plays, but we don't show the plays.
Right.
Because we're not in bed with the league. We're
right.
not Fox. We're not CBS.
Right.
We don't pay. We're not NBC. We don't pay all this money. I look at it the opposite way. I don't have to answer to anybody.
Right.
I don't have the league calling and saying, you probably shouldn't say that about Robert Kraft. You probably should. I can say whatever I want.
Right.
And to me, that's freedom.
Yes.
And if it's not being able to show you guys, you know, the difference between a 3-4 and a 4-3, you're just gonna have to let us try and explain it a little bit more.
Right.
It's a trade-off I'm willing to take.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. And bro, you're great.
Do you miss the reporter game at all? Do you miss waking up with the phone? Do you miss the cold sweats?
So this is a really interesting question. So I'm gonna answer it as honestly as I can. You know, as I mentioned, when you're breaking news, like during free agency that year, bro, the dopamine hits are crazy. Because,
yes.
like, you know, I remember I broke Brock Osweiler, Von Miller, Casey Hayward, Kelechi Osemele, like all of the, and I broke Kelechi Osemele's getting a guard deal that was worth like $12 million a year.
Yeah.
It was about $10 million, you know, at the open of the tampering period.
Wild.
You know, I worded it in a way that was like they've agreed in principle or whatever. But
yeah.
like people were like, yo, you're kind of like hanging out there right now. Are you sure? And I'm like,
yes.
I'm like, it's done. Right. And then it's right. And then Brock Osweiler
yeah.
To the Texans, I believe.
Yeah. For the monster deal.
Yeah,
72 million.
That's right. From the Broncos to the Texans. And so anyway, you know, a bunch of stuff that I was able to break, Jack Rabbit to the Giants, you know, all these different things.
Sure.
And your phone is just going crazy, bro. Likes, loves. Oh.
And you get to just let it sit there. And there's a point where you look over and you're like, I did that shit. It feels fucking great.
You know what's crazy is my phone was never, ever on the table because it was constantly in my hands.
Really?
Plugged into a charger because you can't let go. So I'm on the West Coast, okay? Schefter's up.
Right, 3 hours earlier.
Right, like 4 a.m. So I was waking up at 1 a.m. because I'm not about to sleep until, I got to be up when he's up.
Yeah.
So I'm up at 1 a.m. on the West Coast. I'm in the office. You know, it's like the skeleton crew, you know,
So you miss what? You miss the dopamine a little bit.
You miss that, and you miss...
It also gives you a drive. It gives you, like, a purpose.
Yeah.
It's like a one singular focus.
That's it. Break news.
Yeah.
It's real simple.
And you exist in that lane.
Right.
And thus, when you're out of it, everything else is glory. But that's it.
There's constant feedback, right? It's like you're constantly fighting to do great things, and then when you do something that people deem to be great, they're letting you know that it was great.
Right.
And you're like, damn, this is dope. Like, yeah. I feel like I'm being finally, and I told you my history at Yahoo, so now you know why. Like, I'm being like, you know, pushed down, and all of a sudden it's like I fought to get to this point where reporting is a one-on-one sport. It's blood sport, right? Like, it's me and this other man in the arena.
Yeah.
And he's either going to beat me or I'm going to beat him. I was competing against, in my mind, I was that year, Schefter and Rapoport. Those are the two best guys.
Right.
You know, Garofalo was a great reporter, but like the breaking news thing was, he was good at it.
Sure. Like, he got Odell, and it was an
100%.
Awesome. 100%. And that's a year maker for
100%.
Him. 100%. But the consistency of the numbers, you're not going to fuck with Schefter.
Right.
It's just impossible.
He's the GOAT. And that was the thing. So like, so at the end of the road, you know, you get done, you say, what do you miss? You miss that. And then you miss, what I miss is being able to stay in contact with the network that I developed as consistently, because I'm constantly checking in with them. Hey, found this out. This is something I thought you might want to know. You know, think about this. Let me put you in touch with this person.
Yeah, you know? Not just, hey, man, how you doing?
Right.
No, you're giving information with the hope that you're going to get information back later.
Right. And you develop and you develop real relationships, right? So one of the tricks to it for me was, it was never transactional. It was never quid pro quo. So I always tell young reporters, and this is true, if I was to teach a class on how to become, you know, an effective insider, bro, never show up at somebody's door asking them for something before you provide them with something that is of value to them, and not asking for something in return, right? So when somebody pulls into the neighborhood, show up, provide them with the cake, be like, hey, I wanted to bring this over for you. It's bomb, my wife made it, you'll like it, and introduce myself. And over time, I hope that you come to appreciate the way that we treat you, you know, as neighbors. And maybe then, you know, we'll figure out a way to help each other do well in life. But for now, I just wanted to drop off this cake. I'll talk to you later.
Mm.
That was it. Right?
That's it.
It's super simple. Provide value to people's lives. Well, value in the insider game is information.
Yeah.
So I was particularly well situated to know things that I knew were valuable to the people that I was trying to develop inroads for. So I was constantly sending information their way that they valued. And over time, you develop a network of people who are like, yo, I really appreciate this. It actually is valuable to me. And I know that nothing in life is 100% free. So let me help you, because otherwise you're going to stop helping me. And that is true. Even though there was no quid pro quo, I certainly was not about to give the information to this guy who never, like, for instance, the guy that screwed me over on the Marshawn story. You get no more help, bro. We're not helping you with anything.
Right.
You know, and now I know you're a liar, you know, so it's over. You're done with me.
Yes.
You know, and I'm going to focus on these other people who are good to me, and I'm good to them. And then you develop these really cool, real relationships. I miss that. I still talk to a lot of my guys and girls in the space, but it's not as consistent.
Right.
And so that, you know, that's kind of a bummer, because I really liked a lot of those people. But, you know, all that being said,
How can the homies, how can Lefko Show crew, how can they support Park Stories? Like, where, like, what can they look forward to? Like, what do you think?
Yeah, man, we're working.
Because we're always down for the players, and it's clear that's where you stand as well.
I appreciate it, bro. So, you know, we're at YouTube / Park Stories. So youtube.com/Park Stories, vimeo.com/Park Stories, basically everything is the same thing, right? We post all of our work there. Kenny Stills piece that we did a while back about him kneeling in the NFL, we felt was very important to do. It's the only piece to our knowledge that's been done so far that breaks out why a player that was involved in the initial protest continues to protest. That's not on the internet right now. We took it down yesterday.
Yeah, I was just looking for it.
Yeah, we made it private because it's gotten into a number of film festivals.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. And they've asked that, you know, we keep it offline until it plays at the film festival. So it's good for Kenny, right?
Yeah.
Like, he deserves support. And so we're excited for him to be recognized for his contributions and the things that he's fighting for. And we're working on something right now on an Iraqi refugee wrestler who's got a phenomenal, phenomenal story.
Sure.
We think it'll be our first feature film. So we're in the process of raising money for that now, or getting started to raise money for that. And, you know, that's something that we're really excited about. He's not a notable athlete. But he was born in Karbala, Iraq. He lived there for 4 years, had great memories. And then the remainder of his kind of upbringing was really tough. He was taken to Jordan as a refugee, endured all kinds of horrible things there. Then he was taken to Syria, endured all kinds of horrible things there. Then came to the States at 15 years old, didn't speak the language. Couldn't read the language, literally did not know his ABCs. Jeez. And he missed a ton of school because of all the trouble he'd had in his life. And long story short, he's 24 now. He just graduated from the top honors college in the country with near 4.0 GPA. He's taking 28 credit hours while wrestling for a top 10 program.
28 credit hours.
Yeah, man. Worked in Congress, has influenced legislation related to unaccompanied refugee minors. So, you know, for us, it's we've done the big name athlete stuff in order to empower us to build a platform that allows people to see what kind of work we do.
Of course.
Where we come down, and then that allows us to do stories about, you know, other folks we just think deserve shine, and there's sports like overlap, but we're not just a sports storytelling shop. It's just something that we think there's a lot of rich stories in that space.
Of course.
You know, people want to go watch our stuff.
Yeah, please do.
You know, Zion in the middle of the March Madness. If you haven't seen that piece yet, go check it out. Special Kid, Special Family. If you haven't seen the Jalen piece, check it out. Same thing. Special Kid, Special Family. And
when this drops, I'm going to put the links out there too so that it's easier for everybody to find. It's funny, man, because I do this thing, Lefko PR, where I saw like D'Angelo. What really started with me is D'Angelo Russell gets traded to the Nets.
Yeah.
And he puts out a video at like, I'm working out at 3:30 in the morning. And I was like, anybody can do this.
Yeah.
You could just say you're working at a certain time. And the whole news cycle is like, can you believe that this guy is grinding and all that stuff? And I watch all these athletes, this year it exploded.
Yeah.
This offseason, everyone has a camera crew. Everyone has like their own little production thing, and they're all showing themselves working out. Patrick Mahomes is doing this, and Odell's got a guy, and they're all now showing the same thing.
Yeah.
And so this was the offseason of the explosion of workout videos.
Right.
And then every now and then you get mixed in like a guy pulling a truck.
Yeah.
Or like someone doing something like over the top.
Yeah.
But from like people that are actually making content and that are telling stories, you got to be looking at it and going, okay, we get it.
No, I appreciate that,
I'm
man.
I'm just curious what the evolution's going to be of the whole thing.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right, right? Like, so one thing we say all the time is anybody can get you to 80%, right? Anybody can shoot beautiful footage, and like everyone can go out and buy a Red camera or an Ari and like shoot beautiful footage, but we specialize in getting that additional 20%, and that 20% is more heavily weighted than the first 80%, right? Because what we specialize in is unlocking central truths about these players and their struggle and the beauty in that struggle that allows people to fall in love with them as human beings, not as players.
And take the fucking helmet off.
Period, man. Yeah. Let people, you know, and
let them know more than just your 40 time and your bench press.
Yes, it's important, bro. You know, and when it's all said and done, look, this is true.
But it's hard for players. Sorry
really
to interrupt
hard.
You. It's hard because I look at their Instagrams and I see the engagement they get when they post football stuff versus the engagement they get versus personal stuff.
Yeah.
And all the comments are about football stuff.
Yeah.
And they want that dopamine too.
Yes.
So they want to keep posting them with the helmet on or them making a tackle because that's the stuff that gets the most likes.
Right. But, shut up and dribble.
Yeah.
Shut up and play football.
But they're doing it to themselves.
Right.
And they don't even realize
it. Yeah, you're right.
That you need to kind of have to build it while you're playing of you not wearing a helmet and not doing that stuff.
Yeah.
So that when it's done, you're not just posting Throwback Thursdays.
Right.
But it's this weird trap they get into.
Yeah, man.
And it's hard to break.
Well,
dopamine's amazing.
It's amazing. And oxytocin is another thing that we learned about. Anytime you give somebody a hug,
it's
oxytocin. So dopamine when you get that, and oxytocin. So there are these chemical reactions inside of our bodies that literally, you know, through human evolution have taught us to do certain things.
Yes.
Because they make us feel good, right? And so you're right. But I'll share this with you. We've released 4 pieces. They've been self-released, no cosign, no platform push, no nothing. Just us and the athletes sharing those pieces. 13 million views, 60% average watch times, half of the people, so 6.5 million people that are pressing play are making it to the end credits. So these players are getting tremendous return from an emotional perspective, but also it helps to build their brands, you know, like
100%.
People get to know them. So, you know, for us, like the thing we're most proud of is you go read our comments on YouTube.
Yeah.
People are like,
best.
This changed my life. Like, I want to be a better father because Jalen and his father have such an incredible relationship. Man, Zion and his family are so incredible. It makes me want to be more like them in terms of the way that I lead my life. I want to be a better person. You know,
right.
I'm inspired. So that kind of stuff, bro, is like really good. That's why I want to continue like providing the people. And yeah, man, I mean, the other thing, I guess, since Lefko PR is in full effect is, you know, players that are out there that want something different, that are willing to invite people into aspects of their life that allow fans and those who didn't even know who they were in the first place, which is maybe more valuable,
sure,
to get to know them better and to fall in love with their story, the yes. way that people did with Jarvis, the way people did with Jalen, the way people did with Zion, the way people did with Kenny, you know, come find us. We're looking for players who have broad reach. We're not rich people.
Yeah.
We spend all of our own money on these pieces, at least for now. We do get paid to do stuff for big brands.
Sure.
We do a lot of brand work. We've worked for...
But these are passion projects.
Yeah, man. I mean, we worked for, you know, Adidas, Nike, Microsoft, you know, and that stuff is fantastic, and there's some overlap. But these things are the things that we're like, you know, we can go out and we can buy shoes, we can buy cars, we can buy this or that, or... We can invest in something that will be here long after we leave this planet, that will yep. continue to add value to people's lives. And, you know, I'm lucky enough to be blessed with a partner, a business partner, and a life partner who
awesome.
Believes in it. Yeah.
It's awesome.
Thank you, bro.
Anything else that you definitely want to let the people out there know?
Yeah. Adam Lefko just got engaged.
I did.
Just got engaged. We need to send this man a shout. I'm super, super happy for you. I know this is our first time meeting in person.
Yeah.
But I wanted to tell you congratulations.
No, I was excited to meet both of you guys because...
Likewise.
This is, I don't know why I'm going to go down this road, so this is for everybody. Sometimes when you meet couples, it makes me sad.
Yeah.
Because I go, they want it so bad, and it's just not a thing.
Yeah.
And you don't realize it until you have it.
Yeah.
And when you actually have it, it's the dopest feeling ever, and I feel bad sometimes.
Yeah.
I feel guilty for being with, I can't even talk about this right now. I feel guilty sometimes that I'm with someone that I'm like, yo, this is my person. This
yeah.
is so great. And so I could see it, sense it from your guys' social media, like it was like clear and it was popping, and it's a respect thing. And I want that for everybody.
No
you
doubt.
Know, I want all the homies to find their person, whether it's whoever.
Yeah.
But no, man, you're a great person.
Likewise, bro.
And
we appreciate
it,
you.
Thank you for sharing everything.
Of course, man. Thank you yeah. for having us. And yeah, man, I mean, at the end of the day, bro, we're going to keep building. We're going to keep doing, you know, things to empower people and do more. And you
yeah.
know, we're fans. We're going to be here supporting you from, you know, this day
hey.
Forth. And
every time I get a play in here that needs a story to be told, I know where I'm going to send them.
My guy.
Nick, give me that music because I need it. Rand Getlin, of course, hit him up on social media. Is it just at Rand Getlin?
Yes, sir.
And then Park Stories. Thank you so much for being here. Guys, do what you do. Support them. Show the love. I love you guys. Keep kicking ass. Keep doing you. Keep being you. We'll holler at you later. Again, thank you so much to Rand Getlin. Honestly, a really, really good guy. I appreciate the support that he's given me. But also, this is a guy that we never even met before that interview. And I know we talked about it there, but... he said a lot of things that could get him maybe in some trouble. And I think he also said some things that he's been waiting to say for a long time. Lefko shows a safe space. All right. I'm looking for people to come in here and share their truths. And that's all I can hope for. And he gave me his truth. And I appreciate Rand a lot for that. I mentioned before that I have a conspiracy theory. And what I'm realizing is, you know, if Jay Glazer can get out there and give his theories and, you know, we can have other reporters kind of say, oh, I mean, if Colin Cowherd can go, you know, ooh, Russell Wilson could be going to the Giants. Ooh, I got one. And it's not that serious. But if it happens, I want claim. It's now time for me to investigate my Pepe Sylvia. Here's my left conspiracy theory. Bill Belichick is planning to replace Gronk with Zion Williamson. Telling you. You know, I've always been intrigued at Belichick's love and comfort at basketball games. His adoration with stars, he's always checking out LeBron. The man is so comfortable in a basketball gym. Have you ever seen him wear open-toed sandals at football? I think not. This is a man who doesn't take off, but days off, but he'll take a bucket of popcorn to the face at a basketball game. But that's when I realized, maybe these aren't days off. Maybe this is scouting. Where would Belichick scout basketball players to make the transition? Second round pick last year, Duke Dawson. And that's what piqued my attention. Belichick is football Coach K. Coach K is basketball Bill Belichick. Belichick learned under a hot-headed head coach. Belichick was a defensive coach that had to adjust to temporary players, and he recently won Super Bowl number 6. Well, what do you know? Coach K also learned from a hot-headed head coach. He too was a defensive-minded specialist. that had to adjust to one and done, temporary players. He was going for number six. Right now, he'll have to sit on number five. If Belichick is going to covet a player, it's a player coveted by basketball Bill Belichick. This is where it gets weird. Gronk retired March 24th. The same week, Bill Belichick did press. He never does press. What press did he do? Coach K's SiriusXM radio show. I know. You know what he said there? Basketball is great because everybody plays offense, defense. But in our sport, there's a division between offense, defense, and special teams. It's hard to pull all those together. But for Bill, Zion can be the one that pulls it all together. Last November, an LSU assistant said Zion would probably be the greatest tight end that's ever lived. That coach, Eric Mateos. Where did Mateos coach in 2015? Arkansas. Who was the head coach at Arkansas at the time? Brett Bielema. Not sure if you heard Greg Schiano stepping down. You know who's likely going to replace him as defensive coordinator? Brett Bielema. Rob Gronkowski is gone. Belichick's found his replacement. It's Zion. So when he puts on that jersey next season, don't be shocked. Just remember Lefko told you. This song is absurd. Thank you for letting me be an idiot and do some conspiracy theories. You guys are awesome. I love you with all of my heart. To all the homies in the DMs and all the social, at Lefko Show, you guys are great. And then to the people that are going to be filling up the Reddit, check it out. Put in some questions. I will have some answers. Right now, tentatively, I don't usually do this because I don't want to get excited and then a guest cancels on me, but I want to put the pressure on him. All signs are pointing to Pat McAfee being in here on Wednesday and then that episode coming out on Thursday. It will be absurd if the McAfee man joins the LEFKOE man in studio one-on-one. All that coming for you. Appreciate you guys listening to the podcast. Hit me up as always, Nick. Let's hear that great music. Also, I want to give a quick shout out. One, Nikki G, the audio man, making it happen behind the scenes, listening to all my craziness about how I want to change the studio and all that. He's been down from day one. Number two, Jake. Jake is the one that does the time codes. He deals with edits. He's helping to put this podcast together. I need you guys to know who are the people behind the scenes helping me out. And third, Connor Rogers from Stick to Football. Been helping out a ton lately. My man, I appreciate you. Thanks to those guys. Thanks to you. I'm the LEFKOE, and we will holler at you later.